Go, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are tuned in to Love in the 21st Century. We are on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted by Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And we are going to be starting off with an episode here with Cosmic Kev, something very special for you all.
This day is done. Breathe, breathe in the air. Set your intentions. Dream with care. Tomorrow's a new day for everyone. Of the birds, the direction of love. Breathe, breathe in the air. Cherish this moment, cherish this breath. Tomorrow's a new day for everyone.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
When you feel life coming down on you like a heavy weight, when you feel this crazy society adding to the strain, take a stroll to the nearest water's edge. Remember your place. Many moons have risen and fallen long before you came. So which way is the wind blowing? And what does your heart say?
which way the wind blows when this day is done.
Thank you, Tamara, for having me on.
Absolutely. We are going to be talking about how astrology plays into relationships and maybe some basics on astrology. And we're going to see where we can go from there, learning a little bit more about how astrology affects our lives. So it's sure to be a full and entertaining hour. I definitely tagged some of my friends out there to listen because I know they're as big astrology nerds as I am. But we're going to get this show started with David Bowie, Starman.
We in Western astrology, according to the seasons,
right,
we associate this time with Scorpio, which key phrases I create, and, you know, as Mars and Pluto ruled. But we'd also, you know, Vedic and sidereal astrologers say we're still in Libra time, and this is really the time about relationships. This is,
oh, wow.
This is what, you know, and so that was like when you said, when you want to do it, I said, well, let's do it while it's still, sun's still in Vedic or sidereal Libra.
Absolutely, that makes so much sense. So how do the two compare, the Western and the Vedic?
Well, I'd say the Western astrologers rely heavily on Venus and Mars, and I'd say also lunar relationships too, because I mean the moon is your emotional nature, so that's where a lot of compatibility is going to be coming from. And so I mean they both work. The thing I'd say is that Western astrology's lost a lot of its esoteric heritage. You know, like they used to have gods on in Greek mythology, like, you know, Mercury and Apollo and all of those beings, and they relate to planets and signs, you know, and I think there are still Hellenistic or Greek astrologers that do that. Vedic astrology is way into the myth, the magic, the gods and goddesses behind the planets and, you know, and the stories mm-hmm. behind them. And you know, and then I also do Chinese astrology. Actually, I found that Chinese astrology was the best meter I'd seen in relationships. And, you know, and I thought, why? You know, this is so bizarre. Just people being 4 years or 8 years apart suddenly makes a relationship great. Well, it's interesting because I found in just Psychology Today, they had an article of like the best relationships are like 3 years, 8 months apart or something like
wow.
that, you know. And mm-hmm. so most of those people are going to be four signs apart in Chinese astrology. And I have to say that the most bulletproof relationships I've seen are in that 4 and 8 year, even sometimes same year realm. You mm-hmm. know, not all the Chinese signs do well with the same year, though.
Three years, 8 months. That's the
number. Was like what they said in, like, you know, there was a psychology, you know, a left brain, you know, rational statistical information mm-hmm. on it. And they said that had the best, you know, about a little, just under 4 years, the best statistics of relationships lasting.
Right. So maybe everybody out there that's listening that has the relationship beyond that time might be thinking,
okay.
So 3 years.
So somebody might ask, why would this Chinese thing, how could you break it down into Western astrology, say? Okay, well, I mean, the only annual planet is Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And Jupiter rules our pleasure, our money, the way we expand, the way we get knowledge. And it also involves a certain amount of spiritual upliftment.
Mm.
There's a certain amount of happiness. And, you know, some people put on second chakra, which also can be related to sexuality. So we could say, you know, especially Vedic uses the chakras and the planets, you know, Saturn the first, Jupiter the second, Mars the third, Venus the fourth chakra, Mercury the fifth. And then the moon, the sixth, the intuition, and the sun, the seventh. So there's another thing. So, I mean, the classical thing you're going to get from somebody is somebody says, well, I'm an Aquarius, he's a Libra, my God, we're going to get along, this is great. Okay, and, you know, we'll just play the Western astrology game right now. You know, say they're, you know, she's born, you know, January 31st, 1980, we'll say. And he's born, we'll put them in 1982 on the 7th of October, you know, just random, you know, and I'm not looking right now at the ephemeris to see what all their planets are, and you know, just calling out. But one thing this Vedic astrologer named Sam Jeppy was convinced of, he said in relationships, is forget everything. Throw this one out the window. Anything. If the man's moon is not within 180 degrees before the woman's moon, and this is in heterosexual relationships, it is going to be a rough relationship. Just that. So, you know, I mean, so we have this couple that both have air sun signs. The problem is that people overemphasize sun signs because we already know about, you know what I mean? We know about that, but sun signs are more like your relationship with your cousins. Are you exactly like your cousins?
No.
Of course not. You know, you may have some light group karma that you share, but most of it's really specific. So, I mean, most really good Western astrologers are kind of like Vedic astrologers, too. They'd say, hey, your rising sign and your moon. If you don't know those two things, you can't do a chart. And you can't do that for somebody unless you know what time they're born. If you don't know what time they're born, you don't know what's rising up on the eastern horizon when they're born. And that's their outward energy. That's where people are putting it out.
And there's just no way to know what that rising sign is without knowing the time of birth and the place of birth?
Yeah. I mean, there's things like they call chart rectification and stuff, but even, I don't know. I mean, I was with some top Vedic people in a study, and they had said that they had come up with different rectification times. That's very disturbing. So there's no, right. You know, so I'm not, you know, and there's a lot of them. You can go look in, like, you know, comic book ads or astrology paper ads, and they're like, especially like the Indian Vedic astrologers are very confident. They're like, oh, no, I will tell you everything you need to know. You know, it's just kind of like, okay, wait, just slow down here.
Slow down. So you mentioned a few planets there that some astrologists would look at, and that was Venus and Mars and then also the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, in Western astrology. Yeah,
right, in Western astrology.
Yeah.
So why those planets specifically?
Well, I think kind of Venus is your needs. And it's sort of your appetite in a lot of ways. I would say needs, appetite, creative expression, your receptivity, your female principle. And it's also sort of like likes, what turns you on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes Venus can be loosely related to money too and stuff. Mars is what you lust after, what you're attracted to. What gets your energy? What gets your blood boiling? Whether it's anger or attraction. That's one of my most fun things to play with, because I know that they're pretty close to the same part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
If we could get just about as sexually excited about the people we hate, I mean, just turn that energy around into something different, you know, and besides your antagonism or your discomfort, realize that even in lust, we're uncomfortable because we're vulnerable. You know, we're always vulnerable.
Right.
So I heard, like, somebody say that the person that cares the least in the relationship is the one who's in control. I thought, God, that's how unfair that is, but how probably true that is, too.
Right, absolutely. That is an unfortunate truth, a very unfortunate one for the people in that relationship. So Mars and Venus, and then why the moon, though? What else?
Well, it's your emotional nature. I mean, I think the moon is, it's a big deal. You know, the moon is a big deal because we know from people in hospitals and stuff like that, they said, man, full moons, they all come in, you know, crazier things happen. And we know during, like, eclipses especially, there's more earthquakes and stuff, but during those periods in between them, our brains are floating on water, okay? So our brains, our nervous system is affected like the tides of the ocean. In Vedic astrology, we look at the moon as both intelligence and intuition. I really like this because it also indicates that scientific link to our brains and the tides. You know, it's so, I mean, the thing like Sam Jeppy was saying, you know, is that if the man's moon, so say the guy has a Pisces moon, the woman has an Aries moon, that's probably going to be cool. They could, even though, you know, water and fire can be steamy and not like the best, but the thing is that his moon being in front of hers indicates he's attracted to her. His moon is following her moon.
Mm.
Whereas vice versa, like say she has a Pisces moon, he has the Aries moon. Oh, dude. Oh, my God. This couple is on the rocks right off because he's got, you know, 350 degrees almost to go to get to her moon.
Right.
You know, all around the whole thing. And so, I mean, unless there's a lot of really good stuff happening,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be tough. You know, that's probably what he'd say. So I
there's a few. So you also mentioned a little bit ago that we were talking about, you know, a lot of relationships, a lot of people focus a lot on sun signs. You know,
mm-hmm.
we look at the astrology that's in the newspaper and we think that, like, we'll just compare our sun signs, and if that they're good, then that means the relationship's going to be good. Can you talk a little bit about what other signs that there are there that people, you know, are overlooking, like what it means to have your charts read? Because, you know, we focus in astrology on that one sign, but there's really many more.
Right. And for a lot of people, it won't work, you know. I mean, I really think knowing the time you're born, because that is it. You know, that number one is the arrow that you're shooting out as far as your personality goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you know that, even in Chinese astrology has, you know, they're kind of funny in that the hour of the day, signs never change year round.
Mm-hmm.
If you're born, you know, let's say you're born at midnight. That makes you a rat rising, no matter what. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to be rat rising. You're born at midnight. You know, it's opposite of rat's horse. So if you're born at noon, you're a horse rising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so every 2 hours it changes. And also corresponds to health issues. So the Chinese astrology and the Vedic astrology have that in common in that they both, their astrologies directly relate to the health of the person. That you can just see it. It's just like a blueprint. There's some of that in Western astrology too. But once again, you're going through some minefields there to find it. It's a little different. You know, that's all I would say. There's just more minefields to cross. You know?
Absolutely. So how do you feel that astrology does play out a role in families?
Oh, man. You know, I got to do one family's chart where there were cousins and groups of people. And this one family had, most everybody had a super strong 10th house. And 10th house is house of the career. And they did. They were all driven towards their careers and the work they would do. And they're a great family. They were loving people. They weren't cold-hearted or anything like that. They're awesome. You know, they're good-humored. But the one thing they had in prop was good careers. They knew how to fit in the public. We look at the 10th house. That's when usually the 10th house occurs around noon from where the rising sign was. So let's say, you know, we'll talk Western astrology. Okay, so today the sun was at, you know, 19 degrees Scorpio this morning, you know, in Western astrology, not in the constellations. It is. Okay, so at noon, you know, the sun is going to be, you know, the rising sign is going to be Aquarius, you know. But, you know, the Scorpio aspects will shine for the public. You know, all of that will be great. It'll be seen. It'll be fitting in because noon, we're almost all of us are awake except for, you know, darkness street urchins and such. But, you know, where people that have to moonlight their jobs and, you know.
Right.
You know, and so it's a, you know, it's a powerful time. So somebody born at midnight, you know, their abilities aren't seen as easy. You know, but mm-hmm. if they move over to India or, you know, the Middle East, they'll be fine. They'll be like, they'll be shining with their abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's not always a lot of grahas or planets in a sign at a certain time. You know, sometimes there's a great grouping. And those times definitely put a focal point of certain energy that most of us can universally see. Not just astrologers, but even regular people can look at it and say, wow, yeah, that was kind of a time of that. You know?
Mm-hmm. Us regular people.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned something about the 10th house being the house of career.
You're not a regular person, Tamara.
Oh. Surprise.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. Go back. 10th house of career.
Yes.
That family.
Yeah, so what are the other houses related to?
Let's talk about the love houses. You want to?
Yeah, please.
The love houses are primarily the 5th, the 7th, and the 8th. Okay. So those are the prime houses. The 5th is about our heart and how we have fun and how we party together and how we have a good time. You have a couple that has something going on in each other's fifth house. Could easily start on a love affair. They're just like ready to just jump in and have fun with each other more or less. Seventh house. Seventh house is a house of marriage, you know. And it could be a house of, you know, love affairs too. It also could be the house of open enemies. But it's definitely the house that people look at marriage. And so that's usually what's opposite your rising sign. So opposite your rising sign is what is ruling the seventh house. So we'll say somebody is a Virgo rising in their personality. So they're critical. They look at a lot of details, or kind of a funner person. Well, a fun person, not so much, you know, because they could be so clinical detail. But in the seventh house, in relationships, they become a Pisces. It's like love becomes a drug to them. They are wanting to escape into this other realm. So, I mean, whatever the seventh house rulership is, it's going to tell a lot of how they behave. Now, this same person in Vedic astrology, it's more than likely going to be, they could either be, if it was late in Virgo, they could still be a Virgo rising or a Mercury, but more than likely that, you know, the first 24 degrees of that Virgo stuff is Leo. And Leo is about ego, self-expression, it's about Dharma, it's about action, and everyone relies on these people, these suns, you know, we call them the sun rising. What kind of relationships would they have? Cold-hearted people. Aquarius, because Aquarius is the coldest sign in the zodiac. It's midwinter, and but in Vedic astrology, Aquarius is kama. It's air, and air is sensual in Vedic astrology. In Western astrology, air is very detached. It's very logic oriented. It's methodical. So the Vedics have a little different thing to say about the elements than the Western astrology does. And so that's how the two kind of merge. You know, you want someone really sensual. Well, in Vedic astrology, you go for someone who's an air sign.
Right.
You know, in Western, you'd go for you'd go for a water sign. Yeah, you're air sign both ways. You're both ways.
Yes. So we got to the seventh house, I think. Did we talk about the eighth house?
Yeah, eighth house. Man, eighth house is a really weird house, because it is, I love what this other teacher of mine told me about it, is that this Vedic teacher says it's a house of undeserved rewards. Undeserved rewards. Mm. That's heavy duty. That's why inheritance falls in the eighth house. But it's also sex, death, and birth, and other people's property. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it was the first time at your house or the other person's house. You know, that kind of makes it like it is an eighth house. You know, your house is kind of a second house or fourth house experience. Those are okay. You know, they're still good. But eighth house, whoa. You know, it's just out of control. Everything's out of control. You know, this person has whatever. And so, I mean, and that's what ultimately people are looking for. You know, I often say it's like Libra's a honeymoon. The seventh house is kind of like the honeymoon and the engagement. But the eighth house is like, this is where the action's happening. You know, this is where we're getting it on.
Nice. So those are the love houses, the fifth, the seventh, and the eighth.
Yeah.
And when people are looking at them, say they do have the ability to, you know, they have the time of birth and they're able to figure these numbers out, and where their planets are sitting, are they looking at things that are complementary, or does it really, what sort of things should be standing out?
You know, one thing I think that, you know, the general rule in Western astrology is water on water, water and earth get along well, and they'll say fire signs and air signs are kind of complementary and get along well. And I think that's, you know, I definitely see that, but then I learned about planetary friendships. Planetary friendships? What do you mean? Well, planets are friendly with each other. So Saturn, Mercury, and Venus are very friendly with each other. They have a good relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing can be said about the North and South nodes do better with Saturn and Venus and Mercury, whereas the Moon, the Sun, Jupiter, and Mars do much better with each other. Okay. And so you're saying, what's a Pisces and a Sagittarius doing with each other? You know, that's squared sun signs. Well, it's got to be more complicated than that. You know, I mean, if everything's going to be squared like a 90 degree angle, yeah, there's going to be a lot of tension. That's going to be pretty weird. Mm-hmm. You know, but do people go? Almost nobody. This is what I want to say. Almost nobody goes for a relationship that's like super, super, super compatible. It's like everybody's learning. You know, we go into relationships to learn. We don't go there just to experience our bliss and live happily ever after. I mean, it sure seems like that when we're teenagers and we're just like, you know, and in our 20s, even just getting into it. You know, but, you know, somewhere. Or, you know, after 30, you're kind of like in your Saturn return, you're going, oh my God, what did I do to myself? Oh my gosh, what was that all about? And some of us do it even later, but, you know, it's not.
You mentioned, so the Saturn return happens, you know, around 27 through 30. Mm-hmm, and you said it happening again later in life.
Yeah.
So would you equate that that experience to the second Saturn return that happens?
A lot of people break up in their Saturn return.
Mm.
Here's one thing, too. Just a warning to cougars out there. Generally speaking, doesn't always, but 90, from what I've observed, about 90, 95% of the time, you're 32, you pick up on a 27-year-old, you know. He could hang in there, but there's very likely at 29 and a half, he's going to go through some little crisis, something else. There might be a 19-year-old girlfriend or something, but don't, you know what I mean, don't panic. If you think it's worth it, you know, I mean, it's just, there's this tendency, you know, things get really different after your Saturn return. I think a little more so for men. I don't know why, but it's different. It's different each way. Uranus opposition, I think that's harder on women. That's more like 41, 42.
Mm-hmm.
That's.
What is that? What is Uranus opposition?
Oh, man. It's when your young adult self gets to shake hands with your middle-aged self.
Mm. When does that usually happen?
40 and a half to 42, mm-hmm. about then. It's a different perspective because, you know, it's like, hey, I'm not going to be a beautiful kid anymore. You know, I've got responsibilities and different things. And you know, some men who go through it, they'll, like, get themselves, like, the convertible sports car. You know, mm-hmm. that's, like, the classic at an age, you know, to adjust to that, you know, and show that they still have sexual prowess out there and, you know, and play in the field and all that. And, I mean, it could be also, you know, a facelift, boob lift, butt lift for a woman, too, you know, to wow. kind of get the attention.
Right.
It could happen. I mean, it's different. And then it's, you know, and then it's more like perimenopausal after that. And so, you know, there's all kinds of just different, whoa, you know. I'm not getting looked at like I did, you know, when I was 30 at, you know, 45. You know, it's a totally different scene, you know. And so,
right.
Which is a freedom, and I've heard some women saying it's liberating, but, you know, some people are more invested in that part, you know, and that's okay, too. You know, if your looks are working for you, it's like, hey, whatever works, you know, it's all part of whatever makes you happy. It's all kind of like godly and good in a sense.
Right.
You know.
So I'm here talking with Cosmic Kev on Love in the 21st Century, 90.1 FM. If you have a question, go ahead and give us a call, 895-1114. We're going to have a break here shortly. But I do want to go back to a comment, if I can, that you made that I wasn't, I think, we ordinary person. Mm-hmm. And you've known me almost my entire life.
Well, you said you were an astrology nerd. That right there, you know.
Yes.
So you're obviously not normal.
That's true.
You can't be a muggle with that interest.
Yes. I was wondering if you were going to give me any other gem things that since you've known me and because you know my astrology.
Well, you know, Mercury... You know, is you okay if I share?
Yeah.
I can divulge about you here.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because you're a Mercury. You know, I think you're Virgo Lagna, but, you know, in Western, you're a Gemini Sun sign, but, you know, and Gemini in Vedic, too. So that's a lot of Mercury right mm-hmm. there. And Mercury, this is a good thing, the radio, you know, you're dispensing information. Mercuries are really accommodating, you know, and I think a lot of people love them. They have this ability, they're so clever. One side's hot, one side's cold, you know. So you got to be careful there. You know, they can turn it on and they can turn it off really quick. You know, they can be really very agile and good, you know. And then, yeah, oh boy, it's a rattlesnake. You got to be interesting for a Mercury.
I can identify with that.
Yeah, that's...
I do my best to to stay lukewarm.
Yeah, but you know, with that more Kapha Virgo Lagna, you know, you're going to take your time.
Call
895-1114. Okay, so we got a live one almost on the hook.
895. Yeah.
Always a fun experience answering phones while having a conversation. So anybody that's listening out there that wants to give us a call, it's 895-1114. 895-1114. That's actually what gets you on the air. Often folks look up the number.
I think it's lighting up right now.
Yep. Look up the number online because they think it's on there, but it's actually the number I'm giving out right now, 895-1114.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing great. You want to introduce yourself, let us know where you're calling from?
Pardon?
You want to introduce yourself and let us know where you're calling from?
Oh, my name's Ananda Singh, and I'm up on the ridge in Paradise.
Awesome, thanks for calling in. Did you have a question?
You betcha. Yeah, back in 1986, I seen a Vedic astrologer, Shakyamuni Yuval.
Oh yeah, Shakyamuni. They call him the teacher of teachers. I met Shakyamuni. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, right on. Well, he went on. He taped it. He went on for 50 minutes, telling me how beautiful everything, you know, as a lawyer, musician, everything. And then in the last 10 minutes, he said, "Oh my God, your moon is, or your Mars is displaced," and he fell out of his chair on the ground, kicking his feet for 10 minutes. I never really got to find out what your Mars displaced means.
I think he meant that you had a disabled Mars, which likely means that it's in Cancer. I didn't bring my ephemeris in today, but there's definitely a thing about disabled planets. But one thing you got to remember is every disabled planet has a gift to it. There's a certain thing that you can do. So let's just say that it was Mars. You know, Mars maybe being in a seventh house, or Mars in Cancer is the one I really find they don't like so much. And it's, we cannot let our emotional sentiment get in the way of our will to drive evil out of our life and to give us the courage to face what we need to do. All right? So, I mean, it's really interesting that you called today because, you know, every Tuesday is a Mars Days. You know, when we want to elevate Mars in our life, you know, Mars is Lord of the Earth. And its purpose is to get rid of evil. And, the most simple mantra I know to Mars is Om Harim Mangala Yanama. Om Harim Mangala Yanama. Om Harim Mangala Yanama. And the thing is Mars is compassionate. You know, when sometimes we need the security guard to get rid of the bully. Sometimes we need a David to take on the Goliath that got all the children of Israel scared crap. You know, they were scared as can be. And so in your life, I'm like thinking about back in 1986, Saturn was in the same place it's in right now. So a lot of these, the challenges that you face, some of them right now are similar from back then. Am I making any sense to you?
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, because Saturn, Scorpio, Vedic, it's a malefic placement. It's a tough place to be, but it is a sign that we are on the cusp of giving up our majestic, our materialistic desires and willing to go into the land of moksha, which is just spiritual truth. And so, just from those two things you've told me, don't worry. You know, I mean, I met Shakyamuni and everything, and I wasn't really, I was at first attracted to him as a teacher because I thought, well, if this is the best, this is the best. But, you know, what might be best for most people may not be best for you. You know, and I found another teacher, this woman named Camilla Sutton, lives in Pleasanton. She's from India. She's incredible. I have to just kind of say, like, she brings it. You know, but there's other people that bring it. You could watch on the internet that are pretty good. Joni Patry from Texas is good. KRS Raj Kapel is amazing. Young guy. Really brings a passion for Vedic astrology in a good way. It's easy to understand. But don't get hung up.
I'm not actually. I'm resonating with you. Last night there was sort of an explosion, and like I've just been rolling around doing yoga and stretching all day, and
yeah, that's good.
You know, a really shift of consciousness has taken place just in like the last 12 hours or something.
So what is your rising sign? What's your lagna?
I'm not sure of that kind of thing. I know I was born at 11:53.
Where were you born at?
Detroit, Michigan.
11:53 a.m. or p.m.?
PM.
Okay, so Detroit's a really far western part of Eastern Standard Time. When's your birthday?
July 21st, 1953.
Okay, so you're both a Vedic sun in Cancer as well as Western sun in Cancer. July 21st, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you're a year younger than Robin Williams. Wow.
I have a lot of similar traits.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that you're probably a Libra rising in Western and probably a Mercury, a Virgo Lagna, just like our host here. And, you know, definitely wear that green on tomorrow. And, you know, and consciousness, my friend, you're a Buddha. Mercury's a Buddha. That's a Sanskrit word for it. And so you know this stuff.
Clear, Doctor.
But thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for calling in with your question.
Thank you. I enjoy you each morning, actually, too.
Yay, awesome. On Wednesday mornings?
Plus there's the other forecast at 7:30 on the other days.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, great. I'm new in the area, and I'm just enjoying so much your show. In fact, it's inhibiting my guitar practice time.
Well, rock on.
Yes.
Each show has just been one sweet tune after another.
Awesome.
It's really been enjoyable.
Where did you move from?
Well, I was sort of down in Oroville, down in San Luis Obispo. I was in Hawaii for 6 years prior to that.
All right.
But yeah, I'm sort of a free spirit, move around the world a bit.
Awesome.
Well, welcome to this part of the world.
Oh, I'm loving it, and your station is just incredible. Thank you.
Awesome. Have a great night.
Satnam.
Well, that was fun to listen to, Kev.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, and you're so insightful on the spot. You can just, like, pull it out, wrap it off. Like,
I love this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it just feeds me.
Awesome.
it's crazy. So,
yeah, maybe we'll get a little bit into the story of how that all started.
We got another caller,
though. We do have another caller. Okay, let's do it. Are you there?
Caller?
Hello?
Okay, they're gone.
Yeah. Go ahead and try to give us a call back here in just a moment. We're going to do a Jim Hightower announcement, and then we'll get back to the conversation. If we have a caller, we'll go there next.
Get ready.
Hey, guys. Will Durst here with a few choice words about Donald Trump and women voters. And those words are, boo, not pretty. Cover the eyes of your children, everybody. This election has gone from PG-13 to R, and is quickly headed for NC-17 with your hands over your eyes singing the la-la-la-la-la-la I can't hear you song. The king of white males says nobody has more respect for women than he does, but many members of the female population consider being grabbed by their private parts a strange way of proving it. Every time you think this election has sunk to a new low, Trump manages to dig another sub-basement. Think he's trying to tunnel the vagina. Someone needs to warn them. It's a sneak attack. He's coming in from below. The Donald shrugged off the Access Hollywood tape as mere locker room banter, encountered by inviting four Bill Clinton sexual harassment accusers to join him at the second presidential debate, where he told Anderson Cooper those were just words, not actions. He proceeded to elaborate, and though a bit murky, it sounded like the real estate developer said the reason he brags about grabbing women by the crotch is because of ISIS. Wow, they really are bad guys. Then the Clinton campaign produced four different women who charged Trump with unsolicited advances, egregious groping, and all-round creepiness. The obvious thing to do right now is for the four women of Team Trump to face off against the four women of Team Clinton in a pay-per-view steel cage match. And the winner gets Ohio. Unfortunately, the takeaway is that America is destined to place a serial groper and chronic sexual assaulter in the White House. Just depends on where you want them. Upstairs, puttering around the private residences, or behind the desk in the Oval Office. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
Talking with Cosmic Keb, we got another caller. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Awesome. Would you mind introducing yourself or your son, as you mentioned, and where you're calling from?
Well, I'll give you both our names. I'm a why not fat baby to no war. My son is Yuba. We're calling from Bear Canyon.
Awesome. Is your radio on in the room by chance?
Let me get it turned in.
Awesome.
All right, there, we fix that.
Perfect.
Yuba is like born right on the cusp. He stuck his foot out in Pisces, pulled it back in, did a flip, and dove out the first minute of Aries in 1991.
Okay.
And,
she's born on March 20th?
The 21st.
21st, okay.
Yeah. That was the cusp that year.
All right. So, see, without looking at an ephemeris, I could say anybody born in 91, I mean, that's the beginning of the Uranus-Neptune conjunction in Western astrology. So this is a really unique group of people. And just in that, and so his Saturn is more unlikely as an Aquarius in Western astrology and Vedic astrology and Capricorn. Very strong Saturn kind of energy coming out of this individual. I always think of Chinese astrology too. We've got ourselves someone who's born year of the sheep, you know, and the sheep is this year, and that's metal sheep. And what I've noticed about metal people is they really they're able to cut away from their past, from people they've known, you know, they can really slice and dice things pretty cold in some ways, although the sheep is very emotionally sensitive. It's one of the most sensitive people, they would say. that cusp of Aries, Pisces. I mean, I just look at it as Vedic Pisces sun, you know. It's going into that void, you know, coming with something new. So, I mean, that, you know, without breaking in like any ephemeris, what's going on with Yuba?
What's going on with Yuba? Well, he's standing right here next to the radio eating this stuff up.
Okay.
And he's just about to embrace his Yuba-hood.
So what time was he born? What time was he born?
Right on the money. He crowned on the equinox.
Right. Which was at what time?
1:41, I believe.
Okay, 1:41 a.m.?
That's right.
Okay. All right. So, you know, we would say more than likely that his ascendant is either going to be Aquarius or Capricorn. So, I mean, right there, I'm like thinking, boy, that would put those Uranus-Neptune planets in the 12th house. He's got a 12th house Neptune. There's a strong spirituality. There's a strong intuition. There's, you know, there is, but because of Saturn rulership, probably, that he's a Saturn, it's like he's on a 28-year cycle. So, I mean,
yeah.
Things are usually hard for people that are Saturns. You know, the Saturns I know, it's nothing comes easy. So, I mean, I would not, you know, take heart. You know, Saturn was born from an affair the son had with someone he thought was a clone of his wife. You know, there's usually a certain amount of hardship that goes along and is associated with it. This is great. Thanks for your, you know, sharing this with me.
Well, Kev, you do astrology for our time. I do it too. It's really important to me.
Right, for these times, exactly.
I'm November 29th, 1950.
Yeah. I mean,
sunrise.
1950, so you're year of the tiger, metal tiger, so your son got the metal element from you. You know, born at sunrise. You know, you're probably, that'd be Sag rising, or, you know, you're Mars, you're Scorpio rising, probably, I don't know, somewhere. It's either the nakshatra, between the nakshatra of Aniruddha and Jayishta. I'm not quite sure right now. But yeah.
Yeah, doing amazing work over here, Kev. Just being able to share this information.
Doing amazing work over here, Kev.
Well, I wanted to do it without bringing any equipment with me.
I'm appreciating your art, your flow, your light, your talent.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you calling in.
5 years ago, I was going through some, his mama, I thought she was my wife, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's good.
But, so you guys didn't comment with the story?
I'd wake up to you and you'd pull me through the day, man, because, you know, the truth is, like, in the numbers and the big circle dance we do with everything else in the universe.
Yeah, and a lot of us are crazy enough here to share it.
Indeed.
Bless you guys.
Thank you.
Let's go forward.
Yes. So much in those astrology charts, so much. And thank you so much for just being willing to do it right there on the spot. Share that information. It is obviously helping quite a few people out there. And for anybody that's not aware, you were mentioning that you do a cosmic forecast. How many times a week on KCPR?
It's 5 days a week. It happens around 7:30 usually. On Wednesday, I started a little earlier at 7:25 mostly to kind of get through it. I get a little more elaborate tomorrow morning, but things are good. You know what? We're a blessed people. And we are having an opportunity, I see, as humankind, to seize power to do the right thing right now. And it's going to take some courage, but it also takes encouragement with each other. And this is why KZFR is bringing community. We got another caller. Hello,
are you there?
Yes.
Awesome, it worked that time. I tried to do the old phone switcheroo. Would you mind introducing yourself and letting us know where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name is Cameron, and I'm calling from Yuba City.
Awesome, Yuba City, cool. So what was your comment there, Cameron?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you guys for your show, and Cosmic Kev, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I just really appreciate what you do, and just want to give you a little shout out for support. I heard the caller earlier talking about kind of bringing up a lot of Mars today. And so I have a lot of Mars in my chart, I guess. I mean, not that it's official or anything, but...
Tell me about yourself. What do you know about your chart?
I not that much. I know that I just remember a lot of things being in Mars, like the sun sign and the rising sign.
When's your birthday?
March 21st.
Okay.
And 1977.
That was the same birthday as the sun.
As
just
the sun,
called.
Yeah. I heard that earlier.
And it's also the second year of the snake person that called, too. Last person was year of the snake as well.
Whoa.
53. So.
We got a trend.
Yeah, so we're, yeah.
So Mars is trending, I think.
Yes, it is. Tuesday,
yeah.
Mars Day, trending.
Well, right. And then there's that, God, I mean, so North Node in Scorpio or in Libra in Western there. Do you remember? It's like...
I
remember that. So, you know.
I pointed, I think it was 1:10 p.m. was the time I was born.
1:10 p.m. Where were you born at?
Chico, actually.
Okay. So, I mean, that's pretty early, easy. 1:10 p.m., I imagine that would bring you right over to Cancer Rising, I would think. Huh? Yeah.
Okay.
Western.
Well, I was interested in kind of what you had been talking about with getting rid of evil. I just kind of seemed to
resonate
with that. And I was just kind of wondering, what's the, like, as far as, like, dealing with people that you kind of consider that, or, you know, dealing with thoughts and feelings that you consider to be evil, I was just kind of wondering if there was, like, a, you know, some kind of a astrological piece of advice for dealing with, you know, kind of those kinds of...
Oh, man, you know, the first thing I would say is the jihad is within, you know. It's like everyone that makes me mad, it's usually something about myself I don't like that I'm struggling with and dealing with. I mean, whether it's, you know, the homeless derelict on the street or the, you know, the boisterous Republican politician that seems so uncompassionate. I mean, they're all reflections of parts of myself that I haven't been able to perfect or work with flow, grace, and ease. And so, you know, when we look at Mars, how to make our Mars energy right. It takes one thing about Mars is, number one, is commitment. And that commitment is like getting up early, you know. That commitment is having a goal for something that you're wanting to accomplish. And that you're not anything, any obstacle, you know, that comes up for you is an opportunity. It's a blessing. And you'll face it fearlessly. You know, that's the real, you know, that's the real truth of it all, you know, and that I think, you know, when we're looking at, you know, Aries, you know, even if in just Western astrology, we just say, like, you know, it's like formation of fresh consciousness. And like what I think of like Western Aries is that they get mad really quick, but they forget about it really quick. You know, they get over it, you know. And so there's this wonderful about being in the moment. And, you know, I think outside of wearing red and saying prayers to Mars or getting yourself a coral or something like that, that's more of a Tamasic type of remedy. I'd say just, you know, I would say the thing to do is keep on, you know, doing things. Make some practice that's getting rid of evil, whether it's just cleaning your house, planting flowers, helping someone who's hungry have food. That's, you know, that just any kind of heroic gesture. That's good.
All right, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Kevin.
All right, thanks so much. I did see that somebody else was trying to call while you were answering him. So we have a couple more minutes if you try to get a call in, 895-1114. And I guess it's just all this talk leads me to the conversation of what you share with people that may be naysayers about astrology.
Well, I mean, you know, just since this was originally just about love in the 21st century in astrology, I mean, I've had people, you know, come to me that I'd look at their chart and I'm like, gosh, this is not going to be easy for them to get together. I just don't know if this is going to work. You know, and it's like, how do I gracefully tell that to somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. You know, one thing I just wanted to throw at people is that if you have a planet in the seventh house, especially at least in Vedic astrology, we say you're married to that planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really, I think that only 2/3 of us are made for relationships. I mean, we're all made for relationships, but for like long-term committed relationship, I think that about 1/3 of us would be smart not to do that. That's about it. That's all.
And those that do not have a planet in the seventh house,
yeah,
are the third that should not be in a relationship?
No, the ones that don't have a planet in the seventh house, it's more free game. You know, it's like when you have a planet in the seventh house, they're grahas, they're grabbers, even if it's Venus. Oh, the Venus in the seventh house, but they always want the feeling of being in love. They attract lovers really easily. But, you know, all of that is, hey, you want to have a good relationship, you got a planet in the seventh house, have some devotion to Venus. Pay attention to Venus. Om Hrim Sukraya Namah, you know, do some Venus-like things.
Do some Venus-like things.
Oh, yeah.
I think we have one last caller. Are you there?
Yes.
Awesome. You mind introducing yourself and letting us know where you're calling from and what your question is?
My name is Cindy Griswold, and I'm up in Northern California, but I've lived all over California. And I was just wondering if you could tell me a little about my astrology.
Uh-huh.
I was born in 1955.
Okay.
And
what's your birthday?
Cindy.
What's your birthday, Cindy?
Oh, 12/22/55.
Okay. All right. So winter solstice, 1955. Awesome.
I was born in Japan, too.
Okay. All right.
And, okay. And I was born about 1 o'clock.
All right, in the afternoon.
In the night.
In the morning. Okay. Yeah. So you're probably an ox rising. If it was after one, if it was before one, you'd be rat rising. But just looking at that, you know, it looks like I'm thinking Libra rising, maybe in Western astrology, or Scorpio rising. Could go either way. Probably Libra. Yeah, Libra rising Western. I'm thinking another. I think we got another Mercury here. I do. I'm almost thinking, oh yeah, that's a Vedic Virgo right there. You know, and one thing I noticed about that time of year, though, the nakshatra of Mula, you know, it wants to get to the root of things, and it's not. It's there for healing, and You know, being born year of the sheep, you know, that wood sheep. So you had your Saturn return last year, and you, you know, you're really settling things. The sheep people are very nice. They, you know, they say they're the ultimate hippie, is what I've heard. One of my Chinese astrology teachers. You know, that for you, there's a lot of artha, it seems like, a lot of earth and fire you're working with. You're working with Dharma, and you're working with artha. So it's like you have to be practical, but you have to take action. And a lot of times, sheep people, they want to be nice. And you can't always be nice all the time, because you'll betray yourself. That is all.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Cindy, for your call. And we're going to be wrapping it up here in the last few minutes. I know there's lots of people that are just so curious about, you know, what you can, the information you can provide. Is there a way that people can get connected with you so that they maybe could get their charts read by you?
Sure. You know, you could either, I'd say, kozmickev@sunset.net. You could shoot me an email, cosmickev@sunset.net, or, you know, you could Facebook message me, Kevin Durkin. There's a picture of me with my granddaughter, and you know, that's the one that's me. And, you know, I'll answer, and yeah, but we could do this.
Right.
And you know, what I want to say is that love is a choice. Love is work. It's worth it. But, I mean, if you know, people are looking for a free ride out there. And let me tell you something, folks. I'll be 57 this Saturday, and there is no free lunch. Okay? I mean, there's some people that have really good relationship karma, and I've seen them really happy. But I'll tell you what. For most of us, this is work. It's a work on ourselves, and it takes a lot of love, and it takes a lot of patience and a lot of giving. That's all.
Awesome. So, also, Kev has a YouTube channel, Cosmic Kev 100, I believe.
Yeah, Cosmic Kev 100, or The Planetary Persuader. Changes every week. Check it out.
Yes, I was just watching it earlier today. So many good insights about where we are and the times we're having and how the planets affect them. So,
yeah, new moon tomorrow.
Ooh, new moon tomorrow.
This could be the new start on your love life, the Vishakha new moon.
Set you know, some intentions.
Right. This is where we're reaching out, you know?
Yes, call in what you'd like to have in your life and put that out, that message out to the universe. This is the time during new moons. So thank you so much, Kev, for joining me today. It's been a fun and entertaining hour.
Tamara, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Love what you do.
Thank you so much. So we're going to go out with some David Bowie, Space Oddity. Thank you for tuning in. Ecotopia is up next. It's going to be hosted by Chris Nelson. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. So tonight will be hosted once again by Chris Nelson.
Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
10.
Ground control to Major Tom.
8. 7. 6.
Commencing countdown engines on.
3. 2.
Check ignition.
1.
God's love be with you.
Floating on my tin can. is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Chico Skywatch, a local not-for-profit group committed to increasing community awareness of deliberate aerosol spraying from jet aircraft. The fallout from these artificial clouds is contaminating our air, water, and soil, as well as worsening the drought by disrupting the rain cycle. Find more information at chicoskywatch.org.